Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for late summer registration is September 22nd. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. How satisfied are you with your home? With how it's laid out? With its size in particular? Well, believe it or not, that can depend on its size compared to your neighbor's homes. This half hour, new research on home satisfaction. Also, we'll talk about some of the latest trends on home ownership. Dan Kuhlman is with me, assistant professor of community and regional planning at Iowa State University in Ames. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I want to reach out to our listeners as we talk this half hour about your home, the size of your home. Perhaps you've upsized or downsized your home recently. You want to talk about that. What is the thinking that went into it? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. So explain this study a little bit more, Dan. What were you looking to answer?
Yeah, so I guess the research here that I'm looking at particularly was motivated by sort of two observations that are sort of, when you think about them, contradictory, right? The first is that people's houses have gotten kind of substantially larger over time compared to the 1970s. Kind of the average new construction home in the U.S. is around 1,500 square feet. If you look at the same kind of new construction home today, it's around 2,500, right? Mm-hmm. So people are living in larger homes kind of across the country, on average at least. That itself is not, you know, perhaps a super kind of contradictory finding, though. But what I do think is interesting is that over the same time period, you don't see a huge kind of increase in the satisfaction people have with their homes, right? That has been relatively constant over time in the U.S. And certainly kind of at the upper ends of the income distribution, right? The people who are moving into these new homes. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of, it's an interesting question is why are people kind of continually moving into larger houses, spending more money on housing, but they don't seem to be really getting much back in terms of increased satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. And how did you look at those questions?
Yeah, so what I did is I was using a kind of national housing survey. It's a data product that's conducted by the Census Bureau. And what makes this unique is it asks questions about individuals, as most census surveys do, but then it also asks questions about the characteristics of people's houses across the country, right? So it gives us a good snapshot of the characteristics of the housing stock, both nationally and within certain metropolitan areas. And what I'm using here is I'm using kind of a unique version of this survey that asks not only questions about individuals and their housing units, but also questions about their neighbors, right? So in a kind of subset of the survey, they ask questions about individuals, their units, and then kind of the characteristics of individuals and their units within kind of a tightly defined neighborhood cluster, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that they ask is, how satisfied are you with your home as a place to live, right?
And what is this, a ranking?
It's a ranking on a scale of 1 to 10, right? Mm-hmm. So 1 being relative or extremely unsatisfied, 10 being perfectly satisfied with your house, right?
Yep.
And what I find and what this allows me to do is, you know, there are a lot of things that we might expect would affect people's satisfaction, right? The size of the home, the characteristics of the individual, you know, the age of their house, and all these kind of design features are things that, you know, do indeed affect people's satisfaction. But this survey allows me to look at kind of what I'm particularly interested in here is how does your home compare in terms of aggregate size to those in this kind of tightly defined neighborhood cluster, right? So is your house bigger or smaller relative to the houses kind of right around you? And does that characteristic, controlling for all these other things that we might expect to affect neighborhood satisfaction, does that kind of individually affect how satisfied people are with their homes, right? Mm-hmm. And I find, you know, it does, right? If you live in a relatively small house, controlling for, again, all of the other things that we might expect affect satisfaction, that seems to kind of increase the likelihood that you're dissatisfied with your home. And kind of the opposite is true if you're living in a relatively large house, right? So if you're in a 5-bedroom house surrounded by 4-bedroom houses, you seem to be more satisfied with your house. Just that kind of that positional or that relative nature of your house or your house's size.
Right. We might have been able to guess this. Has this been shown by previous data, or is this something unique here, the research? What's new here?
Yeah, I mean, so this question certainly isn't new. It's my paper, I kind of draw back to the Old Testament, this idea that we're concerned about kind of our absolute well-being, but we're also concerned in many domains about our relative well-being, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, even though, you know, perhaps we shouldn't be, or moral codes kind of direct us not to be, at least. And so people have looked at this question in you know, general happiness, right? Does our income kind of associate with our overall happiness? Or are people also concerned about their relative position in society, right? And so this one, you know, again, this question has existed in kind of all different facets of kind of the social science research over the last 100 or so years. But mine's one of the first to look at particularly the size of people's homes, right? And so I'm able to, again, use a sort of quirk of this survey to estimate this with people's housing specifically. People who have looked at it previously with housing generally do so in these sort of hypothetical surveys where you ask people questions like, you know, would you rather live in a large, you know, five-bedroom home surrounded by six-bedroom homes, or a neighborhood of six-bedroom homes, or would you give up a unit or a room in your house, right? So would you live in a four-bedroom house if it meant that you were doing better compared to your neighbors, right? Mm-hmm. And this question has been asked in several different surveys, right? And you always find pretty consistently that some people are willing to give up kind of a room absolutely if it improves their position relative to their neighbors.
Hmm. So what does this, how do we interpret this? Is this purely, it doesn't seem to be purely a function, because, I mean, if you've got a five-room house, it's got more room in it, also more to clean, by the way. But is this purely a function of what the status communicated by a larger house, or what is going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly, that's a likely and common explanation, right? I'll have to be honest, I can't say specifically with my research exactly what the kind of internal mechanism people are going through to arrive at this, you know, lower levels of satisfaction. I also don't really know if people are actually, you know, conscious of it, right? You might not even think about it in terms of, you know, I don't like my house because it's smaller relative to my neighbors, right? But I think certainly status is one possible explanation, and again, quite likely a probable one. Also, it's just, you know, aesthetically, your house looks smaller when it's surrounded by larger homes, right? So, again, if you just, you know, driving through your neighborhood, if your house is surrounded by larger homes, you might, you know, just see it as a smaller home as opposed to whether it's not, or whether it's surrounded by, you know, relatively larger homes.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit, Dan, about how this has worked itself out over the decades, or we can speculate how this is. I don't know the degree to which data backs this up, but I'm remembering my childhood growing up in the 1970s in Cedar Falls, and your research got me to thinking about my neighborhood and how our homes were more or less that 1,500 square foot, all of them, with very few exceptions. And I think there was, I don't know, it's hard to say, there was a narrower range of homes. I don't know if that speaks to greater income inequality these days than there were in the 1970s. That's true. We know that. But how did we get this progression of ever larger homes from a 1970s 1,500 square foot home to now where you say a new home is going to be more likely to be around 2,500 square feet?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are kind of, as you identified, quite a few factors that are playing into this, right? Just on the kind of relative, kind of the positional satisfaction, what I'm looking at here, the idea is that when you kind of in context in which your satisfaction is tied to the consumption of other people's, like other people's housing decisions affect how you view your own home. What this is going to do, and I'm borrowing from another researcher here, but is kind of create what's called like a positional arms race, right? Just to, you know, we're consuming more housing just to kind of remain consistently satisfied with our home over time, right? And I think, so that's, you know, the kind of underlying economic rationale as to why you might be seeing this happening. I think in the U.S. particularly, there's a few things, right? Our development tends to be, you know, suburban. We tend to develop out as opposed to up in a lot of places, right? So it's relatively unaffordable to develop larger and larger houses, right? Because we have lots of land to do it on, right? I think, you know, you can talk about kind of the ways in which we've subsidized home ownership kind of through federal policy, which I'm sort of happy to talk about too. You know, we've built roads out to the suburbs, and it's relatively cheap to live in the suburbs, right? And so people, you know, this is a pretty easy positional desire to fulfill just because we've made it, you know, through kind of conscious policy decisions, a kind of relatively attractive way to live.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, Dan Kuhlman is my guest this half hour, assistant professor of community and regional planning at Iowa State University. We're talking about his new research on home satisfaction. And one easy way to say it is large houses tend to beget larger houses, I guess, is the way to say it. Now, it's interesting that when we look at the way it's developed in America, I don't know if you've compared this with other affluent industrialized countries, European countries, for instance. I heard it once said, and I tended to agree with it, that the difference between rising affluence, post-war affluence in Europe and America is at least one facet as follows, that with their affluence, Americans tended to buy bigger houses, more cars, and needed more garages in their next to their houses to accommodate those cars, while Europeans often used their affluence to opt for, among other things, more leisure time, better vacations. I don't know if your research or your thoughts carry you to that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, we can, you know, draw distinctions between kind of consumer society in the U.S. versus consumer society across kind of other developed countries. I mean, I do want to say, though, I think this is, while this is especially pronounced, at least with housing in the U.S., there's research that shows that it still exists kind of globally, right? There's some research out of Scandinavia, which we generally think of as relatively, you know, even in egalitarian societies. There still seems to be this concern and these challenges to sort of developing neighborhoods in a way that you have, you know, people being satisfied being next to wealthier or higher income neighbors or vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. So I think certainly, again, I think with housing specifically, there's a lot of, you know, very conscious policy decisions that have happened in the U.S. that have made, you know, housing a relatively kind of attractive investment, right? That's we're encouraged to spend our income and our increases in income on housing through federal and local and state policies, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think, yeah, I think you're correct that you know, especially in cities that are, you know, countries that are more developed or developed earlier, where you already have this relatively dense housing stock, it's harder to sort of show your status and show your position through kind of through what you're consuming. You might choose to do it through taking extravagant vacations or by, you know, buying fancy designer clothing or something else, right?
Mm-hmm. What are the implications here, the takeaways we have from your research coupled with other research out there for consumption, for the environment, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can, you know, that this affects, and I think kind of returning to my initial observation that people are, you know, spending more on housing, they're living in bigger houses, they're living farther away from one another. We're living farther out into the suburbs, right? Yet we're not actually that much more satisfied with our housing, right?
Yeah, why not?
And so you could think of, you know, a number of different kind of policy solutions that might kind of level everyone down. So everyone is going to consume less housing, right? But as long as the policy affects everyone evenly, no one's really particularly worse off, right? Everyone's going to live in a smaller house, but you're still going to have, you know, that positional hierarchy in these neighborhoods where it exists, right? And I think particularly, you know, I think you've identified a good one where it's, you know, larger homes are more expensive to heat in the winter and cool in the summer. You know, if you're living farther out in the suburbs, you're spending more time on your commute, and you're spending more on gas and burning more gas to get you to the city, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can think of, you know, a few things which might kind of encourage people to live in, you know, smaller homes and in more dense neighborhoods, right? So people who have done this work more generally talk about really kind of progressive consumption taxation, right? So try and steer people away from just, you know, competing with one another through consumption, and kind of encouraging them to, you know, invest more and kind of invest more in their children, and start a new business, stuff like that, right? So more kind of socially productive uses of their kind of increased income. Mm-hmm. With housing specifically, you could, you know, if you're concerned about the environmental impacts, I think certainly you could target policies to you know, really tax these large, kind of large new developments and sort of disincentivize people from living in larger homes. You could have really progressive property taxation, right? So you tax relatively modest homes at lower rates and you tax larger homes at higher rates, right? Just to take away some of that incentive to kind of keep consuming larger and larger housing.
Dan Kuhlman is with us of Iowa State University. We have a few minutes left. Let me include this email comment from Janet, one of our listeners. She'd like you to comment about interest rates, and her comment, in the 1970s, it was up to 17%. That would have been at the end of the 70s, but I wonder if interest rates, other factors came into your thinking or your research here, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I think not into this project specifically, but again, I think that sort of fits in with this, you know, larger discussion of what are all the kind of the collective policies that have led people to invest so much in their housing, right, or to put so much of their income and their wealth into their housing when they purchase their home. Interest rates, you know, interest rates are generally set through the market, but like one of the big things about that's existed for the last, you know, 40-some years is that you're able to deduct your interest, your mortgage interest from your taxes, right? So you're essentially getting, you know, a free loan to buy a house, right? And economists have done a lot of work on this and shown that what that leads people to do is to consume more housing, right? Because we're making it relatively affordable compared to other things you might be spending your money on to buy a bigger house. Mm-hmm. So I think interest rates certainly are kind of playing a role in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about housing developments? You know, in our cities, maybe a housing development of 50 houses, maybe 100 houses are put up all at once by some developer. And we see that most of the homes are, though, different within the same sort of square footage. Does that have anything to do with this research? Or it seems like you would want to do that. If you can imagine a housing develop, let's just say 50 houses, and you make the houses vastly different in terms of square footage, a housing developer would probably veto that, wouldn't he or she?
Yeah, I think they certainly might, right? It sort of gets into this, you know, I think, you know, I can't say from my research specifically whether people are actually conscious, like, you know, you're wanting to keep out that big house because you know it's going to make your house seem relatively small. Like, maybe that exists for some people, but I think for other people, this is a much more complicated process, the way in which we sort of develop our satisfaction. But I do think that, you know, in design of places, this is probably kind of impacting it, right? You see, you know, you want to develop these relatively consistent neighborhoods because you know, kind of from past experience, whether you're going to label it kind of positional consumption or not, that people seem to prefer to live kind of in neighborhoods where kind of the housing is relatively consistent and, you know, they're not living next to huge McMansions or next to relatively small kind of small new developments and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm. 5 minutes or so left with Dan Kuhlman of Iowa State University. Let's go to our phones. Karen is joining us from Cedar Rapids. Karen, you have a question or an observation as we think about home size and satisfaction?
Yes. From my own observation, and I've lived in really small houses, I've lived in some of the larger houses, I notice for me, I'm highly aware of it in terms of a timely issue. And that's, for example, I don't care what the houses look like from the outside around my house. But if I go to an open house of a highly luxurious house, or maybe neighbors with a large house have me over, and I really get to see it and kind of dream about, oh, I could have that amenity. If I had really been more successful, I would have that.
Yes.
Then I go home, and it lasts about 2 weeks. For about 2 weeks, I'm dissatisfied with my house. And on the opposite end, if I do volunteer work, and I'm maybe doing volunteer work with people in smaller homes, less fortunate situations, for about 2 weeks, I'm very satisfied with my house. Mm. I feel content. I come home and I say, wow, I've done good things with my life.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable. I'm grateful for what I have. And so to me, it's not just what's around me. It's more like getting in it. And growing up, we had smaller houses next door and big houses on the other side. And that balance probably had me feeling in the middle. But so for me, it's more like it only lasts a couple weeks. And it's more like you get inside it and you really start visualizing what you've done or not done with your life.
I love that observation, Karen. We could call it sort of the parade of homes effect when we go on these tours in a parade of homes, if you have one of those in the community. I have the exact same thing happen to me. It's like, oh, but yeah. And then you regain your gratitude in thinking, wow, I've got a nice home. Most of us can say that.
Well, exactly. And I think if people find themselves dissatisfied and they go do volunteer work or something, you'll come back more satisfied. Or sometimes if you just stay in your own house for a while, like you can feel pretty neutral and okay about it and have a more realistic assessment.
Oh, Karen, I love your comments. Thank you. Dan, what do you have to say about that? Right on the mark, isn't it?
I think it absolutely is. I mean, I want to say I look at size of people's homes because it's a relatively easy thing to measure with the data that I have. But I think it absolutely exists with, you know, other features that are a little bit more difficult to measure. And I think also the nice thing about size from my perspective, from kind of a research methods perspective, is that it's something that I know people, you know, it's something that's somewhat unavoidable, right? We might care about the age of the kitchen or whether or not you have a complete basement in our neighbor's homes compared to our own, right? But those things are just, like you said, kind of hard to observe, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's absolutely accurate, right? If we you know, if we interact more with our neighbors, if we see more kind of the characteristics and the diversity of the housing stock, perhaps that could be kind of a way to sort of mitigate some of these effects.
Dan, before we go, tell us about research that you'd like to do in the future, either related to this or otherwise in community and regional planning.
Yeah, so I'm kind of extending this research right now. We're kind of running a survey. We're sort of asking people similar questions in different contexts to see, you know, what this actually has, kind of the effect it has on people's behavior. So that's one area. And then I have a kind of a secondary interest kind of looking at kind of programs about kind of to address housing quality issues generally, right? So I have a paper where I look at kind of demolition programs in places like Cleveland, where you're demolishing kind of very old and out-of-date housing, and the impact that has on kind of people's neighborhood behavior, right? So are people more likely to invest in their homes when there's a demolition nearby? So a little bit of a leap from this project, but kind of a similar idea about how does the characteristics of our neighborhood affect our own housing behavior?
Mm-hmm. Dan, I assume you answered these questions yourself of your own home. I assume in Ames, since you're teaching and being a professor there at Iowa State University, do you like your home?
I do.
Eight, 9, 10 out of 10?
I mean, it's a good. So I was one of the things that, you know, as a good social science researcher, I draw from my own experience, right? And I moved a little over a year ago from grad student housing, and I'll be quite frank, my grad student house was not the nicest place, as lots of grad student housing tends to be, right?
Yeah.
And so I, you know, moved into an apartment that's, you know, professionally managed and quite nice, especially compared to my own home. But it really only took me, you know, a few weeks of living in this new apartment that I started to look around at my new neighborhood, and I was like, well, you know, I'm certainly doing better than I used to be, but I could be doing better in kind of this own neighborhood context. So I'm definitely not immune to this. I think I'm generally satisfied with my home, but I definitely have a wandering eye when it comes to housing, for sure.
Right. Does being aware of research like yours make us less susceptible to being envious of our neighbors' house sizes, or make us more satisfied with our own lives?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's more of a philosophical question than a question for an urban planner, perhaps. But I mean, I think it does. I mean, at least in my case, you know, I tend to think about these things a lot. But I think it's also important to remember that these things are sort of part of human nature, right? And so I think there's, to a certain extent, we can educate people about kind of their positional concerns, but that will only work up to a point. I think you definitely need, if you're concerned about these issues, sort of concerted policy interventions that really try and kind of undo the ill effects.
Dan Kuhlman, thanks for coming into the studio today.
Thank you so much.
Assistant Professor of Community and Regional Planning at Iowa State University, Dan Kuhlman, talking about new research that he's done about how the satisfaction with your home can depend on its size compared to your neighbor's homes. When we come back after a short break, we continue our conversations with Iowa College and University presidents today. A conversation with the president of Western Iowa Tech Community College in Sioux City, Terry Murrell. We'll talk in just a minute after a short break. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.